What's going on, everybody? My name is Mike Andrade, and I'm with Lace 'em Up Sports, the newly branded Lace 'em Up Sports, no longer Lace 'em Up Podcast. Quickly, I'm just going to talk to you guys about a very special project that's been released. Are the Clippers Cursed? Episodes 1 and 2 are on YouTube. Go ahead, search it up in your search engine on YouTube. Episodes 1 and 2 are about Donald Sterling, the buying and the selling of the team from San Diego, all the way through the selling of the team to Steve Ballmer. Guys, episode 3 comes out on October 10th. You can look for it on YouTube. You can look for it on Spotify and all streaming platforms. Are the Clippers Cursed? Check it out. Hey, Ryan, we have a new theme song, so let's go ahead and let it play.
Yes, hit it.
If you want some, come get some.
This is such good shit.
I am the visionary. I am a revolutionary. I am Seth.
You can cry. I can't give the stuff to Disney, but I can give it to my mama. I can give it to my mommy.
Acknowledge me.
Lately, he just hasn't been very oozy.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Wrestling with Ryan Hernandez. Ryan, what's going on, man?
You're going good. You know, I am home for the weekend, so this we get to, you know, film this episode live for only the second time, so
exactly. It'll be nice. Yep. Oh yeah, another edition of Wrestling with Ryan, our only our second live one. But today, we're going to be talking about the infamous documentary on Netflix about Mr. McMahon. That was good. Ryan, what are your quick thoughts about the whole thing?
So, I did watch all 6 episodes. A lot of the things I already had like knew about, knowledge on. But there are some things that I didn't know, like in when they talk about like the whole steroids scandal. Like I didn't know about the whole, like, you know, that Vince also did steroids and, like, you know, all that. I didn't even know that they had an outside doctor prescribing it.
Yeah,
it wasn't someone within WWE.
Yeah, that was commonplace in wrestling back then. I mean, it was speculated on. Pretty much everyone knew wrestlers were on steroids and all kinds of, you know, performance enhancing drugs, and that was just commonplace in the wrestling industry back then. You know, the schedule was just so brutal on these guys. Vince had these guys going, like they said in the documentary, 7 days a week, you know, 52 weeks a year, and they would oftentimes they would do 2-3 shows in a day. You know, they would have a show, which, let's say the A show is at Madison Square Garden, and then the B show would kind of be everyone else that wasn't performing on the Madison Square Garden show, they would be on the B show. That was very commonplace, and sometimes they would do a C show, just depending on logistics. And so those guys were running rampant back then. Yeah. I think the very common critique of the documentary is that this is kind of just like a recap of the history of the WWE, more than it's a piece on Mr. McMahon and himself, you know, or like at least the dastardly things that people have accused him of over the years.
Yeah, and I know some people have been saying that it's a hit piece on Vince, you know, because it goes more in depth about all the bad and evil things he did compared to, like, you know, the good things he did. I mean, they do talk briefly about some of the good things, you know, of like how he helped WWE expand and grow into the global juggernaut that we see it today.
Exactly. And so let's go ahead with episode 1. It's called Junior. It chronicles Vince's early life. Vince, with his relationship with his father, Vince Sr. It chronicles Vince himself not knowing his last name until he was 12 years old. Yeah. It was... They left a lot of stuff out because there's been some stuff over the years that have come out over Vince's childhood. One in particular, that his mother used to sexually abuse him. They didn't really get into that in this documentary, but they, years back, Vince did an interview, I believe it was with Playboy or whoever it was. They documented, Vince, he let it out himself that his mother used to sexually abuse him. So they didn't get into that specifically, but they did mention the abuse about his stepfather. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because it's like, you know, I know people are seeing Vince as like, oh, he's, you know, he's the one that's doing, like, all that stuff. And so the fact that it's like Vince had that happen to him. It's like, you know, that's a side of Vince we may not know about. It's a side of Vince we haven't really heard
from.
You know, like, it shows like a vulnerable side of Vince, and even someone who's as powerful as Vince McMahon, you know, can, you know, be, can fall under, you know, those things. Like, nobody's safe, even with someone as powerful as he is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so we kind of get a very good insight of to who Vince McMahon is as a person because of the trauma that he went through as a child. You know, this kind of, it kind of makes sense of like the stories that come out later in life, who, you know, with all the rape allegations and this, for and the other. You kind of see the pattern here as a child, you know, Vince not getting the attention that he needed as a child from his parents, especially when Vince met his dad. His dad really was just like, okay, cool, you're my kid, all right, whatever, you know. It's not, it wasn't really anything special for Vince Sr. because he hadn't even been a part of Vince's life up until he was 12 years old.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, like, you know, when Vince Sr. had, you know, the WWE or WWF at the time, you know, for him it was just like, you know, he wanted to sell it, but he never envisioned giving it to his son, you know, because back then it wasn't the typical, like, oh, you know, father hands it to the son, and then, you know, eventually they hand it to their son, so on and so forth. That wasn't the case with Vince Sr., so Vince Jr. eventually had to buy out his own father to get the company.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that Gorilla Monsoon was actually going to get the reins of the company if Vince Jr. didn't buy out his father.
Yeah, that was one of the things I didn't know before, so that was interesting when I found that out.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, to think that, like, wow, even he doesn't even look to his own son to, you know, inherit his company.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's really, you know, you kind of just put the puzzles to the pieces where they belong, and it kind of makes sense for the future of Vince McMahon, you know. Then going in further into the episode, you see Vince buying out his father, and now Vince really going against his father's, you know, his whole, the dynamic of the whole wrestling world, you know, back then, back in the 70s, the 60s, 70s, it was a very territorial based, you know, not just one company, but he had many different territories, many different companies back in those days.
Yeah.
So those played, in different parts of the country. You had your LA territory, you had your, you had your Texas, you had your St. Louis, you had your, you know, this, for and the other. You had so many other territories, Missouri, all of that.
Yeah, and then you have Vince Jr. eventually go into those territories, brings their talent over to the WWE, helps them become household names. And again, the old thing is like, oh, you know, you shouldn't be going to other territories, you know, you can't steal other talents. Like, it became common in wrestling, though, that, you know, people would seek other companies' talent, and, you know, that's how you grow and so you build. It's a business.
Exactly. So Vince was very ruthless in his approachment towards these guys. You saw guys like Rowdy Roddy Piper, the Junkyard Dog, Jesse Ventura,
Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant.
You saw him approach on all these different guys that were performers for different territories, offering them big contracts to come over to the WWF. And so that's how he was able to steal these guys and be able to grow the WWF into what it was.
Yeah, and then the guys we named ended up becoming some of the biggest stars in not just the history of WWE, but in the history of wrestling as a whole. You know,
exactly.
Especially, like, you know, even if you're not a hardcore wrestling fan like we are, you know names like Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Stone Cold, John Cena, even if you're not a wrestling fan, you know those names. You know who those guys are.
Right.
And that's one thing that Vince did very well. He knew how to make stars. He knew how to make big names.
Yeah.
In the early days, you know, beginning days, and even for years, it was like that. Vince knew how to, you know, get reactions from the crowd, whether it be positive or negative. Because that was Vince's mindset. He's like, any reaction is a good reaction, whether it's positive or negative.
Right. Exactly. And so you saw Vince was pretty much ahead of his time in the way he was thinking. You know, the territories was very much just kind of like, okay, so we're going to put on shows in this city, in this town, and we're going to have our stars, or we're going to have our own local television. And that's how the wrestling business was. It was territory-based. Vince McMahon Jr. comes along, buys his father's company, and now he wants to take these territories, and he wants to converge every bit of these territories, all their stars, and make one big company that's global. You know, at least national at the time. And that's how you got the World Wrestling Federation getting going, you know? And so you saw all of these different guys come together, and they built television, you know, nationally for the WWF. And so you're taking these guys, and so it just hit. It was the right, you know, right time, the right moment for these things, you know? In the 80s, you know, all these different things in pop culture were coming together, like MTV, all these different things. And the WWF fit in that category.
Yeah, and Vince would take advantage of anything he could, you know, to, you know, get in the media, to get in the public spotlight, mm-hmm. whether it be appearing on talk shows.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Or even Vince at one point created his own talk show.
Yeah.
With WWE.
Exactly,
talent,
that's a good point.
And,
yeah.
And that's how he got mm-hmm. the idea from, like, oh, you know, he's been on talk shows, so. Mm-hmm. He got the idea of, like, ooh, let me make my own talk show and make it so it's all my guys.
Exactly.
And get out there.
I didn't know that Vince was on David Letterman. You know, I didn't know that he had made appearances on that show. It just seems so wild to think about. You know, Vince McMahon now would never go on somebody else's show. But he did back then to grow his own company. And so kudos to Vince for having the foresight to do those type of things. And then he created TNT. The talk show for the WWF at the time, and Vince was pretty much the lead host of that show, and it wasn't just about wrestling anymore, it was about entertainment.
Yeah, and hence that's why we get the whole switch from, like, oh, we're wrestling, no, we're sports entertainment. That's mm-hmm. where the whole thing kind of originated, kind of started, you know, because it's like, yes, they're wrestlers and they're wrestling, but they're telling stories, mm-hmm. and they're doing things to entertain the audience. You
exactly.
know, with all these segments that you see.
Exactly. Yeah, and so it was awesome what Vince McMahon really created in his own universe, you know, building the WWE universe, you know, for better lack of a term. But you go from that, and then he gambles everything into WrestleMania 1, you know? Like you said in the documentary, you have the Super Bowl, you have, you know, the World Series. Now you needed something for wrestling. But not just wrestling, entertainment, too. So you build the entertainment side, you have the wrestling side come together, you have WrestleMania.
And most of the other talent, and even some of, like, you know, the reporters, like Dave Meltzer, they even said, like, if WrestleMania fails, that's the end of the WWF. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's go big or go home.
Exactly.
And Vince knocked it out of the park with the first WrestleMania.
He did. You know, it was at Madison Square Garden, and you know, it could not have went better for the company. And then after that, you have the rise of Hulkamania. And then once Hulk Hogan took off, I mean, it was, the sky was the limit for the company.
Oh, yeah. Hulk Hogan was, like, the mainstay. He was the John Cena back then. You know, he was the guy. He was in every, you know, big main event picture. In fact, I think he main evented the first, like, five WrestleManias.
Six or seven,
yeah.
Yeah.
So Hulk Hogan was everywhere, and then surprisingly enough, he didn't lose his first WrestleMania main event until he lost to the Ultimate Warrior
mm-hmm.
in the Intercontinental Championship, WWE Championship unification match.
Yeah.
That was the first WrestleMania main event Hulk Hogan lost.
Yeah. You know, they really didn't talk about Ultimate Warrior too much. You know, they kind of skipped ahead. You know, they kind of mentioned, okay, Hulk Hogan was on top for many years at that point, and they wanted somebody new, so they created the whole Ultimate Warrior. But Warrior really didn't hit with the audience. I mean, he was very popular, but he wasn't Hulk Hogan. So they had to go back to Hogan
yeah.
at some point.
It's because they said the Ultimate Warrior didn't have the charisma of a Hulk Hogan, and when you look back at it, he really didn't. You know, Hulk Hogan, like, may not have been the best, like, in-ring wrestler, but he could connect with the crowd, with his promos. Hulk Hogan was very likable, very lovable.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And so he was, and that's what the whole thing that they mentioned in the first episode of the documentary too, is this whole thing was built towards kids, as the territories were built for
adults.
Kind of adults, you know, the average working man, drinking man,
like the 18 to 34 demographic is like the big demographic they try to cater
to. But the World Wrestling Federation built their whole industry around what can we market for kids. So Saturday morning cartoons, toys, you know, action figures, clothes, everything that you can market for kids, the WWF did at that point.
And it took off. And that it ended up working out really well for the company, you know, because their, like, numbers went up, revenue was up, like, everything was going up. Like, everything was going perfect for the WWF. Like, everything they were trying to do ended up working to perfection.
Yep, and then, you know, you have that, and it was just the boom period, the golden age, the golden era of wrestling. And people still look back on this era as the greatest era of wrestling, because that's number one, that's what they grew up with. And number two, really, I mean, like, besides, like, I think the Attitude Era was bigger, but, I mean, this set the industry going forward for forever. You know, you can't necessarily say that without this boom period there would be a wrestling, you know, feature, because there really wouldn't be. It would just be territories, and it would die out.
If it wasn't for a name like Hulk Hogan, wrestling would have never gone as popular as it did.
No, exactly.
You know, like, it wasn't just Hulk Hogan, but he was like the main like focal point. You know, but it was like. He was another popular one. Ultimate Warrior was very popular. Roddy Piper was very popular because he was considered an underdog by a lot of fans. A lot of fans were able to relate to him.
Exactly. And so now you have, coming out of the golden era, Hulk Hogan had been on top for many years, and now things are getting to a point where people are looking into what these guys are doing. And so now there's a lot of... just scrutiny, and eventually Vince McMahon gets indicted on charges for supplying wrestlers with steroids.
And then, and it creates a whole big lawsuit, but then we come to find out later, Vince wasn't actually the one, like, supplying it. He was letting it happen, but he wasn't physically or verbally, like, doing it himself, and that was kind of what this whole case was about, because they were trying to say, like, no, Vince did it, like, we're gonna throw him in jail for that. And ultimately... Yeah. The end, they found, like, no, Vince didn't do it. It really was just somebody from the outside just doing it.
Yeah, so the whole point was them trying to, you know, convict Vince on supplying these guys with steroids and giving them the needles and all the other pills to do so. And so really the trial went on for a year or 2 years, and so at the end of it, Vince was not found guilty, but there was a lot of ramifications coming out of it. At this point, Hulk Hogan was on the outs with the company. He had come back for WrestleMania 9 at this point, and then they had put the title on him, but then he left in 93. And Hogan really just, you know, his time had just run up in the WWF, and he didn't want to do it anymore.
And he was done with wrestling, and so that's when he wanted to pursue acting, you know, being on television. And I remember when he first told Vince that, it was actually Vince said that him and Hulk Hogan spent 2 days in their hotel room writing a script for a movie. And then, of course, Vince says, like, oh, you know, it wasn't the best movie, but it wasn't, like, the worst movie either. You know, because Vince didn't want to lose Hogan, because Hogan was his guy. So he's like, okay, here, I'll do this with you. That way, you know, I can still work with you, and maybe he can convince Hulk Hogan to, you know, stay in the company. But ultimately, at the end, Hulk Hogan still... left. He pursued acting. Didn't work out.
The industry had taken a hit. It was, business was way down at that point. You know, you're talking about, they had essentially lost Hulk Hogan. He hadn't signed with WCW yet. But, you know, business was way down at that point. And so you had to have built stars, not only for the younger generation, but guys that didn't look like the size of Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior. Because those guys were jacked up on steroids. In fact, when Hogan did come back at WrestleMania 9, and then when he signed at WCW, Hulk Hogan was noticeably leaner. But the WWF needed to market guys like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Undertaker, guys that weren't necessarily jacked up on steroids, or at least didn't give the appearance of it. Although there was Lex Luger, who did kind of, he was a bodybuilder, but they weren't marketing those type of guys. You had younger guys that had more of an athletic build, and so they wanted to market the more of the athlete towards the new generation WWF. But business was way down at that point. You know, going off of the golden era, it was bad. Times were bad. They didn't know if they were going to be able to, you know, have a future of the WWF. You know, at some points they were very close to bankruptcy. They weren't drawing very many crowds. In fact, if you look back at that time in 94, 95, I mean, they were putting WWF Raw in high school gyms. You know, it was really, really bad. Yeah. You know, it's not like today where, you know, arenas are sold out.
Yeah, and then this is when you had the whole period of, you know, the Monday Night Wars coming into play, you know, after, you know, Ted Turner starts WCW alongside Eric Bischoff.
Yep.
And, you know, WCW, of course, bringing in a bunch of old WWE guys, people that Vince himself and other WWE fans probably thought, oh, they're WWE for life. They would never leave Vince. And I remember Hogan even told Vince, like, I'm never going to leave you. He's like, I'll always have your back. And that's another thing, looking back at the case, is Hogan spoke the truth, and he did not out Mr. McMahon. And that's, so Hogan is part of the reason why Vince came out of that lawsuit successful, because Hogan, even though he was with WCW or going to sign with WCW, he still had Vince's back in that regard. And that's where we had the whole WCW beat Raw, or Monday Night Nitro beat Raw for 83 weeks straight.
Well, yeah, you had, at that point, you know, Hogan was still a babyface in WCW. And things weren't going very well for Hogan in WCW. I mean, they were drawing, but that the whole red and yellow persona was getting played out. And so that's when at Bash at the Beach in 1996, you had the outsiders that just came from the WWF at that point. They were invading WCW. And as everybody knows, Bash at the Beach, you know, you had Hogan become the third guy in that whole storyline. And he turned bad guy. And then that's when the NWO was born.
And it's when we saw this, you know, Hollywood Hogan.
And then that was really, truly the start of the Monday Night Wars, because at this point, the WWF was losing in the ratings. And WCW built their whole entire show off of who can we market. They were going to market the adult, the 18 to 34 audience. The WWF at that point, they were still trying to build off of children. You know, you had guys like, every character in the WWF was a job title. You know, you had Duke the Dumpster Drosy, you had all these IRS, you had
Doink the Clown,
you had, it was all job occupations, you know, but very much marketed towards kids. And Vince had no choice but to change the way they were programming their television into a more adult-centric television.
And it's when we see the birth and rise of the Attitude Era. And that's when we see a big name, you know, big names like Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock coming out. Because, you know, when Stone Cold started off, he was, you know, stunning Steve Austin, and then The Rock was Rocky Maivia. And then, you know, that's when Rocky got the whole, like, die Rocky die chant. So he slowly transitioned into, like, The Rock and becoming a heel, and Stone Cold was told he was going to win the King of the Ring, because I think, oh yeah, we talked about it, because Triple H was planned to win the King of the Ring, but because the whole curtain call with the click, Vince punished him and gave it to Stone Cold. And then Stone Cold said his very famous Austin 316 promo, and then we saw the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, you know, they go through the whole thing of the curtain call with Nash and Hall leaving. Shawn Michaels was WWF champion at that point. And who's going to get the brunt of the discipline? It was going to be Triple H, because Triple H was practically a nobody back then. Now, you know, you had Stone Cold as King of the Ring, and that really just took his character off from that point, you know? Stone Cold was beginning to be a household name. He was starting to get really popular with the fans. And then he started building towards what Stone Cold would become a couple years later. But yeah, at this point, WCW was still kicking the WWF's ass in the ratings war for 83 weeks in a row. And they were really just, it was really just based off the backs of the NWO. The NWO was red hot at this point. You had so many guys coming in and out of the NWO. You had Dennis Rodman at some point. But then at some point, you know, like, the NWO really just started to die down, and then the WWF really just started to take off. You know, the WWF was building towards a newer market, towards the teenager adult type of audience. And then you started seeing the formations of D-Generation X. Stone Cold was taking off. They had really lewd and sexual segments in the shows.
Used to have bra and panties matches.
Bras and panties matches. I mean, not even that. Like, if you go back, I mean, obviously they're not going to show this on the on Peacock or the network these days. But there was some nudity on these shows. I mean, you talk about. I remember we used to rent VHSs, and it was a pay per view fully loaded. And you had Miss Jackie. She was like, they were in a, her and Sable were in a, like, a lingerie contest or something. But Miss Jacqueline Moore, she was wearing like a very like a stringy top, and she was very busty, and she just like quickly like moved the string of the top, and like her whole boob was like exposed on television. It's just like. And I remember they showed that on the VHS, and I'm just like, as a kid, I'm like, oh my god. And I, you know, if you look back, you know, the cat, formerly Jerry Lawler's wife, she exposed her boobs on a pay-per-view. You had a couple other instances where that happened, but it wasn't just bras and panties matches. I mean, they were going full on. With this whole like, you know, sexual nature on television.
Yeah, that's why, like, that was the whole point of, like, you know, like, Sable's character, Stacey Keebler's character, and even Trish Stratus' character at one point, you know, they were used as, like, sexual, like, objects, you know.
Yeah.
Like, for kind of for, like, arousal and amusement.
Yeah,
hence that's where we get, like, the whole, like, oh, Trish, get on all fours and bark like a dog.
Yeah, that was a couple years later, but, yeah, they do talk about that, the time where Vince, on television, on live on Monday Night Raw, he had Trish go on all fours. I'll never forget. I think it was Paul Heyman's first night on commentary, and he goes, "Mom, I came to Washington D.C. and I got to see Bush." but the envelope was really pushed at that point, and you know, it worked for the WWF. It was really an exciting time, you know, because of all these different things going on. You know, so many different guys in the WWF were main event guys. Austin, Rock, Mankind, Triple H, you name it. Everyone during that point had a storyline, and it worked for the WWF, and WCW wasn't able to keep up. They weren't able to keep up. And then, you know, at some point in 1999, the WWF really just took off, and WCW just really died off.
Yeah, know? And then, of course, 1999 was also a very infamous year, because you had the over the edge. It was.
Yeah.
Where you well, had the...
Yeah. Yeah.
You had the incident with Owen Hart falling to his death.
Yeah.
And the whole controversy of, like, Vince saying the show should go on, and everybody gave him a lot of criticism and a lot of slack for it, and it even did a lot, because at the time, this is when Bret Hart was left for WCW, and even Bret Hart is like, oh, I think they did this as a way to get back at me, you know?
Yeah.
And then that you also had the whole screw job, which happened a couple years prior, or the year prior, I believe.
Yeah, it was like a year and a half prior. We kind of skipped over that, but we can talk about it. I mean, it was... The screw job has been talked about everyone's yin-yang for years and years and years. There was really no information that was necessarily new for the screw job that they had talked about, but everyone knows about it. You know? The biggest thing that kind of surprised me was, man, Brett still gets emotional off of it. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, I knew that, like, Triple H and Shawn Michaels, like, knew. Yeah. But I didn't know that Vince flat out told him, like, no, you lie and say you have no idea.
Oh, yeah, that part
I did not know. Yeah. I didn't know that part, personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, like, the whole segment about, you know, talking about the screw job, and it was just like, you know, because Brett did not want to lose the title to Shawn.
Yeah.
He was fine with, like, dropping the title, just not to Shawn, because mm-hmm. they had legitimate beef, you know. Mm-hmm. They really hated each other. Like, for them, it wasn't just a storyline. Like, in real life, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart really hated each other. And, you know, and then Bret's also one of those things. It's like, he doesn't want to lose the title in Canada to Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, at that point, Bret and Shawn had just a blood feud going on. I mean, these guys, in personal life, really hated each other. I mean, you had to have really just... I mean, watching it at that point was just... You saw the blood feud between these guys. You know, it's been much documented. The whole hair pulling incident backstage before Monday Night Raw, where Bret and Shawn Michaels got into it and they got sent home. And these guys really just hated each other.
And you even had Shawn Michaels say it in documentary. He's like, "Yeah, I was an asshole back then."
Yeah,
like, I was an asshole back then.
Exactly.
And it's true. I mean, of course, Bret did some things like, hey, you know, that's not cool either, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, these two really hated each other, and like, it took years for them to actually, like, you know, make amends and actually, like, you know, have respect for each other and actually like each other.
Exactly. Yeah. So then you have, you know, that kind of, you know, bled into Brett leaving for WCW, and then Owen Hart staying with the WWF. Owen wasn't really focused on anymore. He was kind of made fun of in storylines. And then he was supposed to be the Blue Blazer at Over the Edge. And unfortunately, Owen Hart was part of an accident that caused him his life. And that was really the first real tragedy I remember of wrestling. I remember being a little kid and then just watching on the news that Owen Hart died. I was like, oh my God, Owen Hart, really? Like, that's freaking crazy. You know? Yeah. We're getting into a lot right here.
Yeah, you know, we're really opening it up here, getting deep here. But, I mean, this first half of the documentary just, you know, really eye-opening. It really gives you, like, a different perspective on things, too, on how things were running and, you know, and stuff like that. And then I know it'll be in our next episode, but with the whole thing with, like, you know, Shane and Stephanie, for me, that's pretty interesting. So
it really is, too.
It'll be interesting when we get into that.
Exactly.
Next episode.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, yeah, I feel like this episode went really good, Ryan. Anything you wanna plug?
Anything I want to plug?
Yeah.
Well, in case you guys haven't been checking, we do have a new X page. We've updated our Instagram.
Yep.
We have updated a logo for this show.
Yes, sir.
Mike has an updated logo for his Let's Go Lakers podcast.
Yep.
So you'd be sure to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of good stuff in the works, a lot of good content.
Exactly.
Coming. So,
yep. Yeah, guys, you know, all exciting stuff coming up. We have a Let's Go Lakers podcast coming up on October 1st. We have a lot of stuff coming up in terms of documentaries that I'm working on. As you listened to before, we have a Are the Clippers Cursed podcast. Not podcast. Actually, it isn't podcast. It's a it's on YouTube. It's a documentary, but also you have the podcast versions on all the streaming platforms.
Yeah.
So look it up if you want to.
Yeah. And not to, like, you know, toot my own horn or anything, but I am working on a little project of my own. Mike is helping me, like, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned for that. It'll be a little bit of a ways away, but just to give you a small little preview, you know, you guys know I love John Cena. John Cena is my guy. He's my goat. He's my idol. My hero.
Sexual partner.
And then seeing how, you know, he's having his retirement tour, I'm just doing, you know, a little something, you know, in tribute to my hero.
Exactly. All right. Sounds good, man. We'll see you next one on the next one. We'll be talking more about the Vince doc, and then tune in for much, much more.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff going in the works. So, you know, thank you guys for listening. We really appreciate you guys being in on this journey with us. You know, spread the word. Check out the new socials, the new X page, the new Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. I know Mike's been updating the Facebook, so check it all out. You know, spread the word.
Exactly. I'm taking a little selfie for it. So if you're listening to this right now, just know that this selfie will be time stamped right here. All right. Here we go. Until next time.